Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
I live in North Carolina, eastern North Carolina, between Raleigh, Durham, and Wilmington.
Oh, wow. You're on a sweet spot. My favorite spot, actually. Okay, yeah. So I vacationed there like 2 years in a row. I decided to go to Wilmington area, and there's a little beach town that's down from that. I forgot the name of the little town, but we stayed there for two seasons in a row, and I really loved it. So, do you know if you guys are having a lot of UFO sightings or phenomena that's being witnessed out that way?
Well, yeah. In fact, I record it. I have probably more recordings than anyone else that exists. And that's why the government has, you know, I've worked basically officially or unofficially with the government for the last 15 years. And just I have over 2,000 recordings in the last 2 years with a camera. Many, many of them are ground level or up in the air. So, yeah, we see it all the time, and I share it with many people. Sometimes crowds as many as 20 or 30.
That's amazing. Okay, so I haven't heard anyone say that they're getting tons of video and the craft or ground level. What are they doing exactly?
Well, they're actually balls of light. You know, the phenomenon morphed back in 07 when it all happened to me. I was, you know, taken for 4 hours, and it never was a flying saucer. It was always huge balls of fire. And basically, that's what everybody's seen since. Very few physical craft. You know, in the 40s, they talked about Kenneth Arnold saw these little chevrons that looked like a bat wing, sort of. And he said they skipped about in the air, sort of like a saucer skipping on water. Well, the media said, oh, flying saucers. Well, for the next 40 years, everybody sees flying saucers. Then that went away, and it became triangles in the 90s, late 80s, mid 90s. And everybody saw triangles. And then I came along in 2007 and reported orbs, I called them, but they were huge balls of fire. And now everybody sees balls of fire. So it's, the phenomenon shifts in the way it presents itself. But I think the fire, the balls of light, is its normal appearance. It's what it's about.
Are they normally in groups? Like you see these balls, it's more than one usually?
Well, there is something about that, that the number three, I see them often by alone, one, but more than the threes. They come in threes, and they'll sit up in the air, and you won't even recognize them. They'll look like stars, but a triangle formation. And suddenly we might see one brighten up, and then another, and then another, and then they fly away together. But some reason or another, three is a number that continually comes front and center.
Any thoughts? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I've seen many more than that. 9, 10, 15 or more following up one another.
Okay. Well, you're naming prime numbers. So is there any, have you come up with that conclusion? I mean, is it, are they showing up in prime numbers, or any thoughts about that?
I haven't really don't know a whole lot about that, but I do know three is a number. Three is an important number for whatever reason.
Okay, so are you? Do you have any thoughts as to why, or the significance behind the three, or have you looked into that at all?
I have, you know, and I've gone through many different thoughts. I don't know why exactly. I wished I did. I have ideas, you know. There's, but it in the biblical days they called it the triad or the Trinity. But I don't know. You know, it's just something that when I experienced this in 07, I drew and reported, which got the attention of NASA and the government, of these little beings that were glowing about 3.5 feet tall. And they were glowing sort of like the moon, very shiny appearance on the outside with glowing red eyes. And they had what looked like a triangle on its chest. And so I don't know what that means, but it really rings, you know, the pyramids in Egypt. But I wish I knew. It's so much. It's so complex, this phenomenon. But I will say it's always been a spiritual experience for me, not like nuts and bolts, flying saucers and aliens. It's always been spiritual.
Right. There is a significance with the number three. And it's referenced all the time. I know that, you know, three people seem to die in threes and things like that.
I've heard that.
Yeah. I've known it. It's just, I can give you a ton of instances where people die in threes, but, I was wondering if you've actually, thought about that.
I have as far as the spiritual aspect of it, because it's spiritual. When it first happened in 07, you know, I was pretty much down and out at the end of my rope. I was ready to give up on life because of dealing with a terrible disease. Crohn's disease had ravaged me, and I went through the 911 thing about building 100 homes a year. I lost my business, and my health went even worse during that time, and I reached a point of wanting to give up. Really was so distraught. With four children at home, I was walking, praying, "Lord, how do I deal with this? Help me, whoever you are up there. I need help." And I walked up a hill, and there were these balls of fire, huge, 40 feet around, bigger, 50 feet, flaming orange balls of fire.
Where? Tell us where that was exactly.
This was on the Cape Fear River, which leads into Wilmington. The mouth of the Cape Fear is in Wilmington. So I'm 60 miles up from the city by air, and was with my son and three other guys who were working for my dad and I, building a house, and they just wanted to, they'd been out of town for 4 months, and they were ready to come back to town and finish the job, and we were celebrating, and they wanted to go fishing, so I took them fishing on the banks of the Cape Fear River, and that's where it all went down. That's how it all started. I wasn't fishing. I was letting, you know, my son was enjoying. My wife was out of town. And so it was just my son and I, and they came home from the coast. We were down at Holden Beach building a house, which is an hour and 40 minutes away. But when they came back, they wanted to fish. And so I took them down there, and about 2:30 in the day on a Monday. And that evening, about 5:10 to 5, I had been taking a stroll in the forest watching for wildlife, but I really won't fish, and they were, and I was just, you know, being very silent about what state of mind I was in, and I was walking and crying out to heaven, whoever's up there, you know, help me. I just had a near-death experience 2 years before, dealing with this Crohn's disease, and I walked away from them just before dark and walked back up to the field where we came in. I had to go up 100-foot elevation. When I got up there, there were these two big balls of fire that looked like the setting sun, glowing red with fire shooting off of it, swirling, just spinning around and around. And I turned to run. I got scared after I watched them for a little while. And when I went to run, a third one up above me appeared. It was way up there, but it came zooming down within a second beside the other two. So now we got three balls of fire on the hovering over the trees, you know, at the other side of the field where we came in. I mean, it was up at the paved road. And when I got back to the fire, I thought 20 minutes had passed, and it turned out to be I was gone for 4 hours. And they'd been hunting me all night. And you couldn't have made me believe only 20 minutes had passed. And it turned into a manhunt. And then my son was lost. He went in the forest looking for me where I'd gone earlier that day. Down in a cul-de-sac, if you can imagine, you know, big cornfield, and you drive across the field on a farmer's little road, and got to the back of the field where the woods are, and then the little road goes downhill 100 feet to the river bottom, about a quarter mile drive, and ends in a cul-de-sac. He'd gone into the back of the cul-de-sac looking for me, and ended up being, he actually saw these little glowing red balls of light come down the road towards him, and it scared him. And the fire was between him and them, so he didn't want to go towards them at all. So he started hiding, and they came right up to him within 20 feet, and they knew he was there. One was always watching him, the other, he said, was picking up sticks and bottles. There was a little trash pile there where people had camped and threw their trash in from a hurricane. A tree had fallen over, and it was a stump. The stump was still there, but it was leaned over, which created the hole, and they'd made a trash pile. And he was paralyzed. He couldn't move or cry or scream or anything. And I found him right there in that spot. When I come back, I panicked because he wasn't at the fire with them, and they were blessing me out because I had been gone so long. But long story short, I led him back to the fire, and somebody yelled, "Look!" And we looked up, and the whole sky became alive with stars that were moving about. They looked like stars, bright ones like Venus. And then three more came all the way down from way up there and landed across the river in front of us, 75 yards away. And pandemonium set in. We left our poles and coolers and all on the riverbank, jumped in my truck, and we flew up out of there, back up to that field. And when we got up there, there were three more, the same three that I had left, you know, I saw earlier that day. They were still there. But the one that took me had changed from a red glowing ball of fire to now this white egg shape or tic-tac shape thing that was between us and the highway, hovering over that little farmer's road. So we couldn't go. We were blocked in our way across the field, and we had three on the river behind us, a quarter mile behind us. We just left terrified from, and three in front of us. And finally, that thing turned towards us and came up straight at us, and gradually gained altitude to it passed over our truck. I could have shot it with a slingshot through the sunroof. It was that low down and no sound. And when it shot off like a cannon once it got past us to the north, and we headed home from that point. Stop right there.
Let me ask you some questions about that. You said, and you answered my first question, you said there was no sound at all. Were you guys feeling any type of way? Were you feeling sick, or was it affecting your health being that close to those balls of fire?
Not at all.
No.
Nobody said so.
Nobody said so. Okay. Did you notice that they were reacting to your movements? Like you said, you guys were trying to get away from them. Were they responding to you?
Yeah, they absolutely knew we were there. And It wasn't intentionally that they were frightening everyone. It's just when you see something like that, it's not natural for humans to see anything from another world. And everybody was terrified. I wasn't. That's the weird thing, because I was afraid when I saw it originally up at the top of the hill. But when they brought me back, I had no fear. And it was like, it was really weird, because when I found him, I was terrified my son was gone. But when I found him and got him back to the fire and these other three appeared, they were frightened out of their mind. And I was like numb to it. I was just amazed at what I'm seeing. I didn't feel fear. And even when we got to the top of the hill, they thought the world was coming to an end. We were being invaded, and there were people crying and people, you know, in my group, my son and these three grown men, they were just making comments. I'll never see my children again. It was really frightening.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so you were taken. They didn't know you were taken. And 4 hours elapsed. Do you know if those balls of fire were still around them for those, you know, for that time period, for that missing time period while they were looking for you? Or
I know two of them were for sure. They never, you know, at least they were still in the same exact spot that they were when I first saw them at just after 5. But that third one that appeared way up high and came down, that's the one that took me, and it took me up into the air, because I have bits and pieces of memories from seeing the earth from way up high through what looked like I was in something round and clear. I could touch the walls, but I couldn't see them. But I had a beautiful view of earth from above.
So like it came in and like grabbed you, Chris, and engulfed you in this fire. I mean, did it look hot? I'm trying to get a really good visual here. Did it look like the typical fire?
Yeah. It looked like a swirling. If you look at the sun when it's setting late in the evening right above the trees, and you can look straight at it and it doesn't hurt your eyes, that tangerine orange color. That's what they looked like, but they were spinning, swirling around and around and around, and these little flames were shooting off the fire as it was like throwing off these little flames of fire. So it looked really hot, but when the one that came over me and took me, it shifted to a white, glowing white, like a welder's light, with light just going around it in such a manner, it looked like crystals almost, because the way the light looked. And it just engulfed me. It came right over my head, and next thing I know, I'm in a dark spot. Couldn't see anything. And then after a while, I began that night, I didn't remember anything. But after a Harvard psychiatrist came to my home and did a series of regressions, I began to remember little bits and pieces, but it was always a pleasant thing. But here's the key. When they brought me home, I was no longer sick with Crohn's disease. I had been treated, what started out as IBS and morphed into this terrible disease, which had me where I couldn't work. You know, I just lost everything I had. A 5,000-foot house with a pool. I'd lived there for years because they blew up the World Trade Center. And I live in a town called Fort Bragg, Fayetteville. The military market shut down, and I had 72 houses under construction, and it all went. It was a slow-motion train wreck, which made my sickness way worse. And they took that away. I've never had another symptom. So, you know, that's why I wrote the book and the name UFO of God, because it was a spiritual experience. And, you know, it's my thought that they're really the angels from the Bible, the biblical angels. But I don't know. I can't, you know, it's just my thought trying to connect all the dots there.
Yeah, that is just astonishing, really. I've never heard anything like that. Although there is another gentleman that does research about accounts where people come in contact with UFOs and totally will get up and tell anybody that they cured them of whatever illness they had prior to the contact. Okay, so let me ask you this. Okay, there were you, and it sounds like it was you, your son, you said three other men there with you. And they were looking for you 4 hours of time, missing time. Okay, let me, okay, as far as your son, these people apparently, I'm imagining, were just scared out of their mind. You're gone. They can't find you. There's the two of the balls of fire, I guess, are still there in that area. Did they say that they were taken to, or do you know if they were also taken?
I don't think they were. They didn't never say they were. And but I think it's possible my son was, because they lost him too. He was gone for 2 hours. And all he remembers is being hiding in the edge of the forest. Imagine a cul-de-sac. You drive down a road and you get into this round cul-de-sac. It's about, I don't know, 175 yards across circle. And where we parked the truck, he went further into the forest looking at me, because I'd gone that way about 3 o'clock in the day, come out about 4:30, and checked on them while they were fishing, all four of them, my son and these three. They were having a good time. And I was like, do you want to stay or do you want to go home? And they said, well, we're just getting started. We want to stay. I said, well, let's get a fire going. It's going to get cold tonight. And it was January. So they went around that cul-de-sac of grass, you know, grassy spot, and picked up sticks and created a fire. But my son had gone into that same part of the forest that I had earlier looking in. 2 hours later, they couldn't find him. I mean, they looked for both of us for a long time.
Let me ask you something here, Chris. Now, the area that you're talking about where you guys were kind of being chased by these balls of fire, is it populated? I mean, is the area really populated where, you know, people would easily see these balls of fire just running around doing whatever in the distance? I mean, is it like that or what?
Yeah, we're about 15 miles south of Fayetteville on the river, and it's not all that populated. But yeah, there were, after NASA did their investigation, Dr. Pavan Meyer, he actually interviewed 8 families or 8 different people that some of them were families that witnessed these lights going that direction. They lived fairly near. And so there were 8 other people that saw them that night.
Tell me how NASA got involved, or how were you able to get them involved, or did they approach you? I'm just wondering about details about it.
The minute I reported this thing was, I didn't for the first 10 months. It happened in January the 8th of 07. Well, my community, I was born and raised in, I was a deacon in the Pentecostal Holy Church for years, and actually was too busy to do that anymore, but my family was still and is still into church. But when I came home, they ostracized me and told me I was playing with the devil. And it was just a terrible thing that went on there. And so I didn't report it for fear of, you know, this
backlash community. And things.
Yeah, yeah. And my wife was trying to keep our children halfway out of fear, because they were afraid after what I told them and what their brother had seen. And so it was a huge problem. But NASA, there's a Discovery Channel, right after I reported it in October.
You reported it to who?
I reported it to an outfit called MUFON, which I'd never heard of, but I had no idea about UFOs, period, at that time, because of being sick and building and raising children. So I got on the internet and found, you know, everything I could about what happened. And this company, this organization comes up, report your UFO sighting. So I emailed them and sent in a report, and they immediately called back wanting to come to my house, and I wouldn't let them. I just wanted to report it, but I really wanted to talk to somebody. But I was being quiet because my wife was, you don't need to talk about this anymore. You're scaring the children. They can't do good in their school.
Yeah, but did your wife believe you, though?
Yeah, well, yeah, because she started seeing them. The family did. Right after it happened, she didn't start with. Nobody did. But it never quit happening. And that's the thing about this case. But the minute MUFON came, within a couple of months, they'd talked me into doing a Discovery Channel show, which would promise to be vindicated and everybody would know. And they did a hit job on me. It's in the book. All this is in the book. And it backfired on them because the phenomenon never left. But NASA caught wind of it. The government did, CIA, all of them. And they paid me a visit. My son called me one day and said, Dad, there's a guy here from NASA wanting to meet you. He drove all the way from Cape Canaveral, 13 hours. And we became best of friends for the next 11 years until he died.
You didn't know he was coming. He just showed up.
Right. I had no idea.
Wow.
But I've been, if you read my book, the gentleman that wrote the foreword is Jim Semivan, and he's one of the highest ranking guys in the government, General Service. He's a GS-19, and there's only a half a dozen maybe of them. He ran the clandestine operations for the CIA. And we're still very close friends. In fact, we're going to up north to just spend Memorial that a few days during that time in May with him, my wife and I. But the government came, and NASA came first, and they never left. I've been investigated by them for years and met quite a few of those people. And I've been on the base and had to get a clearance to get there. And there's a lot of story in the book that I've been in places only 300 people have ever been in since the 50s. It's so secure.
Where is that? Is that a certain, are you talking about a certain part of the base? I imagine that's what you're talking about.
Certain buildings within the facility at Kennedy Space Center.
What buildings? Can you tell us?
One is the astronaut crew quarters.
Okay.
There's only 300 people ever been in that building since it was built. It's where and it's pretty interesting. If you read the book, I explain what happened there and why they took me there and what they told me would happen. And
wait a minute. Why? I mean, tell us, give us something. Give us something. Your case is so extraordinary and so unique that I mean, I've conducted a ton of interviews. I've never heard anyone, and I've listened to a ton, have never heard anyone have so much interest from NASA and is so deeply ingrained in these. And like, these people are your friends now. Some of these people, you know, they're friends, and that's just amazing. Tell us about what happened. I mean, tell us that, but then I have to go off on to something else because I need to pepper you on something else, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, let's just say, I'm still very good friends with all these people. And, but they just told me when they came, another person came to my house, and it's in the book without giving too much detail. And they tested my whole family with some metal that didn't come from this world. Didn't tell me what it was. They just put a piece in one hand and said, what do you think of that? And I said, well, it looks like aluminum, but very strange.
They told you that it didn't come from here.
Yeah, it came from 50 million light years. And I know for sure it didn't come from here because I've been involved and tested recently with it again. Back in June at the Monroe Institute, and that's in the last chapter of the book. And I had three pieces of it that I had come across. It was dripping from orbs, like slag from welding or something, onto the concrete. And the military has that. They classified that I never get it back. Wished I'd have known to keep a piece of it, because I was told it was be worth $1 billion if I had a piece still.
And you were able to touch it and get it off of these orbs that were dripping off? And
It dripped onto concrete. But when they put another piece in my other hand, the second piece, while holding one, they added another piece in my right hand, and it was different. It was aluminum foil looking stuff that you couldn't crease it. You could mash it and it would kind of halfway come back, but it wouldn't crease. Very thin. And I was told that was the insulation for this thing. But it immediately sent energy from one hand through my upper body, through the arms to my other hand, and caused me to nearly black out. And next thing I know, the scientist from NASA was looking me in the face. My whole family, my wife and four kids were there. They all got tested. But he was saying, "Why you? Why you?" I'm like, "What do you mean? What just happened to me? Why me?" He said, "I would have known you were lying if you hadn't had that reaction." But I'd never seen a reaction like that ever. He said, "We've only seen two others, but this was by far incredible." So that ended up getting me an invitation to the base, where I met with scientists and walked through mission control and into the crew quarters. And when I walked into there, there was a lady that worked there. She was by herself in this secured facility. And she looked at me and said, "How are you getting here?" And I'm with the scientists. She said, "There's only 300 people ever been in this building since its existence. And that includes the astronauts and all their families and the doctors." She was the den mother, they called it. She'd been there 30 years. She said, "Only one U.S. president's ever been in this building, and no senators, congressmen, or anything."
Wait a minute. Is it because they can't go in there? Why would only a limited number of people be able to enter that facility?
Let's just say I was told, and it's in the book, that I would never be the same once I left that place. That these people, when they came back from space, something came with them and it never left. It was still there.
Like, so, to say energetically or?
Energetically, the energy, which is, you know, this is, they're like magic. These things are, they're not physical. They can appear in front of you, like, or be there and you never see them. Their energy is still there.
What are they? I mean, but why? I have so many questions. Did NASA say why? Why did they want to contact you? I mean, why?
Because it's in the book, and it was this reason. I asked them when they came to my house. I said, you know, I was afraid of the government, because when I reported it to MUFON, they had basically had my whole family believe in never trust the government. If they come, they'll kill you. The men in black will come. You know, they had us in fear. And when they first showed up, we were terrified. So I asked them, I said, "Why are you coming to my house? Why do you want me?" I didn't trust them at all to begin with. I said, "Why are you here? You have all the spacecraft and all the, you know, the space laboratory up there, you know, whatever you call that thing, space station. You have all the telescopes and all the money in the world. And why are you here in North Carolina, you know?
Interested in me.
Interested in me."
Right.
And he looked right at me and said, "Well, you know, we see it. We know it's there. But it has nothing to do with us whatsoever. But we know it likes you, and we would like to study this."
That's what I thought. Because they're coming to you.
Yep. And that's why we're the most studied case in the world, in the history, by government organizations. Not only NASA, but many others. In fact, I have someone from the DIA who'll be here Wednesday night. Very high-ranking official from the DIA.
For what reason?
They just want to investigate and experience the phenomenon. They come here, they get to see it with me, most of them.
When they, okay, so let's talk about that for a second. You said it never left, the phenomenon is still happening. Are you saying now you see them at your house, or are you having to go out somewhere before they come to you?
I see them inside my house. I see them in the air and on the property. And I was in Utah this week. We saw a couple there. And it doesn't matter where I go. It follows me wherever I go. California, Las Vegas, Pennsylvania. Doesn't matter.
And people, whoever's near you, they see them as well, or are they only visible to you?
No, everybody sees them, whoever's with me, unless there's a very bad skeptic, someone skeptic, like, I don't believe this, they'll never get to see it. But if you're open-minded and, you know, humble yourself and you're willing to experience it, you'll get to see it most likely. And they have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of witnesses. And I filmed it with witnesses. I mean, I have 2,000 videos in the last 2 years on my cell phone.
I mean, are you putting those up somewhere? What are you doing with those? Are you archiving them? Are you showing them to other people that may be interested in seeing them as well? Or what are you doing with those? Giving them to NASA?
Well, yeah, the government sees all of it. But I have actually... on my UFOofGod.com is my website. It's the same as the book, but you can go there and see my social media accounts and testimonies from government officials, CIA, the military, academics, and you can find my Instagram account there is where I post a few videos. I probably have 50 or more on there of some in the forest beside me. 25 feet away, and some up in the air, either high or right above the trees, and balls of fire.
So you're saying you see them like you described one, like huge, I guess, like 40 feet round or whatever. They're coming to you obviously in different sizes if they're in your house, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Okay, so if they're in your home, what are they doing? Floating around, and what are they doing?
They're floating around. Well, let's just say last month there were four inside my house. I saw one, a green one. My daughter witnessed two. And I'll give you my wife's account. We live on 15 acres on a little pond, on a small cabin with a gate coming in. So it's a private place. But I go out most every night to look at the sky for an hour or so. So I walked out that night last month. Sky was cloudy and couldn't see anything. So I went in my shop, spent about 10 minutes, and went back in the house. And the wife said, well, when you got up from your chair, and our chair, she never left where she was sitting. She was sitting in the chair. I was sitting on the couch, just 7-8 feet away. She said, when you got up and went outside, suddenly I hear this electrical sound, buzzing, zzz, like you would, sort of like a crackling noise where you take an old light switch and you go to flip the switch on or off. You hear that little sizzling in there. Sometimes you hear that. That's how she described it. And she looked up to see what it was. And there's a green orb about the size of a softball, hovering right over my chair where I just left. And then it kind of like exploded and filled the whole room with green light. So, yeah, we see it in the house. And I think the average sizes of these things are about the size of a bowling ball, like the cover on my book. You'll see on the cover, there's an orb there with three dots. Remember those three dots. The number three, and that was painted by Leonardo da Vinci. It was a lost painting that sold the most expensive painting ever to be sold, $458 million. And I know who owns it, and we're actually in contact with this guy.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw it. Wow. And when these officials come into your home, they're able to, and, you know, view these orbs floating around, flying around in your home as well.
Not in the house. That's not the rare. Okay. You don't see that very often, but it, you know, we may see one this month and not for a couple of months. But outside, they're always out there. We see 20, 30, you know, anywhere from a half a dozen right on up to 30 or 35 orbs. We filmed 35 one night here. I filmed 37 ground level orbs last week on last Thursday night.
Are government officials setting up cameras and things like that to capture the phenomena for themselves?
They want to. They've asked me many times, can they put equipment in my yard, instruments on top, and I'm entertaining it, even with some of the biggest names in the business, like Harvard University has reached out to me and wanting to study this. And I don't know if I want, you know, people tapped into my Wi-Fi and all this stuff remotely going to some place I have no control. So I invite them. You come here and look at it, bring your cameras, and they do, and we film it.
Wow. What do you think they are? What are these balls of light? I mean, are they angels? Are they aliens? What are they?
Well, you know, I wish that's the million-dollar question. I wished I knew, and nobody knows, but I can honestly tell you my thought is, because of 16 years at this, it always comes in a spiritual way. I say a little prayer, and here they come. I walk outside, and a lot of times they're there waiting on me, and they'll just start appearing and flashing at me, and here they come. But other times I might have to say a little prayer, and not to them, but to the way you would pray, you know, to, you can't
imagine. You're praying to God. You're, right. You're a Christian?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just pray to God, and here they come. And this is every day of my life. This isn't once in a while. This is every day. I mean, it could stop tomorrow, but it's only getting greater. Because all I can tell you is that it has gone off the charts with intensity of how much is coming.
You mean with... Okay, when you say intensity, I'm sorry, Chris. When you say intensity, are you talking about as the number of sightings, the number of balls of fire or activity or all of it?
All of it. The activity is growing exponentially and has been since before COVID.
Do you think there's a reason for that?
I know there's a reason.
What's the reason?
Well, I think, I don't know, you know, but I know there's a reason for it. And let's just say this, in 2019 at Easter, I walked out my back door, which is only 6 feet, 8 feet from the water, so I can fish off my back porch. I walked out the back door at Easter, and suddenly this orb appeared several hundred feet up in the air and started erratically flashing. Came spiraling down to through the tree tops to the ground on the far side of the pond. And I just knew, because they communicate with me telepathically. I know when they're going to come before they come often. And I've demonstrated that to the government. And they all know that. I mean, Dr. John Alexander, U.S. Army colonel, retired. Worked at Los Alamos National Laboratory, has a PhD from Harvard. He was with me on the river one night in 2015 when my daughter and his wife, and I pointed up above us. I said, John, they're here right now. And within 10 seconds, it appeared above us in a big flash of light. And there were about five more flashes, this huge white ball, then went zipping off to the south. And he wrote a book called Reality Denied, and the whole second chapter, how what he experienced and how there was a temporal connection. He couldn't believe how I knew it was going to be there before it was. And I've demonstrated that to the government officials before, more than once.
When you say you know they're going to come, is it, you said telepathically, are they giving you a feel? Is it a feeling or is it a voice of communication to tell you that? I mean, how do you know that?
It starts out with this feeling and then turns into a vision. So I start receiving, for example, my manager, you probably traded emails with David. He's in the book, the last chapter. And he tells the story about when he met me first time. He drove from Washington, D.C. here to and he works with the government. He drove here from D.C. was Sunday afternoon, got here about 1:30 or 2, and we were in my den talking after dark. And suddenly I looked at him and I said, they're here, David, right now. And he jumped up, and I did, and he met me at the front door. He went out first and just looked up, and there's a huge orb hovering 200 feet or so above my house. And when I walked out behind him, I looked across the tops of the trees, and here come two more. And he filmed them with a cell phone. They were that low and close. And he looked at me, and he said, my Lord, I'd heard you knew when they were here ahead of time. I just witnessed it for myself. And we turned out to be best friends. And I see them, and I see they put visions or, you know, images, I would say. It's always associated with a feeling as well. My hair stands up like needles, you know, like it's hard to describe, but my whole body becomes electrified, and then I begin to see visions. It's not like an audible hearing anything. It's a sense. It's a vision. Images.
Chris, do you know, I mean, have you looked at the phenomenon where this was occurring? This is the same balls. I don't want to say the same, but they were also witnessed by these pilots back in the war. They call them Foo Fighters. I mean, are they, have you looked at that phenomenon? And is it the same, or, I mean, your thoughts?
No, exactly the same. And why were they showing up then? You know, let's just say we get back. They were showing up because of the suffering that was going on. When this orb came out of the sky in 2019 at Easter and hovered over my pond for 30 minutes, I filmed it for 18 minutes. I have it on video. It actually, when I hit record on my camera, cell phone, it was 25 feet from me. It vanished. It was putting on a show, flashing, jumping up and down about 10 feet. And there was a translucent being there. That was about 8 to 10 feet tall, and it was clear looking, like that movie The Predator, when you can see it. I could see it because the orb was inside of it, if you can imagine that. And I have a video of one coming out of an orb, a glowing white figure about 7 foot tall. But it spoke to me and said, we're going to reveal ourselves to the world. We're going to let you help do that with witnessing with camera, and trouble is about to come. Store up your food and lock your doors and tell everybody you know. So immediately, I hadn't spoken in about 7 years, 6 years, since around 2012. I immediately called some people and said, I want to do a podcast. And I did 10 podcasts in 2019. And then warning about this. And then in 2020, I flew out to San Francisco and did a live interview there, warning about the same thing. And same thing, witnesses in camera. We're going to appear to around the world. We're going to wake the people up. And when I flew back to Fayetteville within a week or so, COVID hit. They didn't tell me about COVID. They just told me trouble was on the way, to lock your doors and stay inside. And let me tell you, the U.S. government and everybody heard me, and they took it very seriously. How did this guy know that? It's on the record.
Amazing. I mean, this is really, truly amazing. When's the last time you've seen these orbs?
Saw probably 15 last night.
Wow. This is so wild. And so you're on your UFO of God, on your website and your social media. people can go out there and look at the ones that you have up, right?
Yes.
All right. And all right. So is there, are you doing any touring or any type of talks or anything where people can meet you in person, Chris?
We plan on that. And but right now I've been working on a History Channel series, a brand new one that comes out this summer. Can't say any more about it at all. But I think you'll find the guests will find it interesting what we do and how it turns out. And but I've been so busy with that and releasing this book and doing podcasts, we haven't had time to really get around and do book signings and all. But that's our plan to do so, and I think we'll be listing that on our website.
I've enjoyed the conversation. Your experiences are just truly amazing. I haven't heard anything like it. The book is called UFO of God, The Extraordinary Story, The Extraordinary True Story of Chris Bledsoe. Chris, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much for having me.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.